present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an offer from the Go Groupie website, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Say goodbye to unnecessary noise with this soft, slow-close toilet seat for £8.99. Bottom fixings included.
And our thanks to Rachel Arnold for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Phil Jupitus and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, journalists Sam Leith and Jeremy Hardy. Phil, who is inquiring about the other side being too cooperative?
You don't bring me flowers. So, there's a bit of bickering going on in the house at the moment between the pink shiny one and the Wallace from Wallace and Gromit one. They're doing a lot of shouting at each other because the Wallace from Wallace and Gromit one knows a man who appears to have modelled his entire life on Uncle Monty from With Nail and Die. All flowers. The Reverend Paul Flowers, to give him his full and deeply ironic title, was in the papers at the weekend because they'd managed to get a little bit of video footage of him in a car where he appears to partake in a drug deal where he was purchasing £300 worth of crystal methamphetamine, cocaine and ketamine. Now, I don't know a lot about the Methodists. But that sounds to me like a go-getting religion.
Yeah. Could you have thought that crystal meth was something to do with meth?
It's entirely possible.
I think it's shameful. He's dragged the name of banking through the mud. The Tories keep saying, well, why would you choose a man to run a bank who's had no experience in the banking industry? Because when you let people with experience in the banking industry run the banking industry, it's worse than having a budgie with a calculator running it.
He was asked by the Parliamentary Select Committee how many assets his bank had, and he said, oh, it's £3 billion. And the actual answer was £47 billion.
Wow.
And you think, am I nearly there? Ballpark? Also, he was on ketamine. I wonder if any of you people tried this drug.
Well, you do. What is ketamine, darling?
It's a horse tranquilizer.
No, in that case, I've no...
I tried it once. I spent half an hour earnestly attempting to figure out whether I was lying down or standing up. And the people around me were taking bets.
Wow.
Turned out I was lying down, actually.
Did you manage to jump a fence after taking it?
No, but I cleaned up with 3-2.
He does seem to have had limited banking qualifications. I don't know how he got the top job. Maybe he, I don't know, brought some of his delicious homemade biscuits to the interview.
But the person who grassed him up, because they said they were disgusted by his hypocrisy. He'd pick them up on Grindr. Grindr is an app on your phone that allows you to connect with a nearby man for sex. So he'd pick this guy up on Grindr. He'd taken him to what he described excitedly as a gay orgy.
Right.
And this man then went, oh, I'm disgusted by his hypocrisy. Wasn't he the head of a drug charity? You think, do you look for your partners in gay orgies to have massive integrity above all other things? Is that the first thing you look for?
I don't know why you keep looking at me.
The words gay orgy and Sandy Toksvig just go together. they just do. I feel a little bit sorry for him because obviously he's unfulfilled romantically because the Tories talked about his past and all that was known about him up until this was that he'd copped off with a man in a loo 30 years ago and had porn on his work computer when he was a Bradford City councillor. Now, I've never had to sit through a council meeting in Bradford, but I think if I had, I'd either be looking at sneezing pandas or something that pandas don't do very much.
I was just thinking, if they're looking for a new chairman for the co-op, the mayor of Toronto will be available soon. David Cameron has announced an inquiry into the debacle at the Co-op Bank. He can't be displeased that the Labour Party is facing questions over its links with the former chairman of the bank, the Reverend Paul Flowers. Labour have admitted that Flowers held a private meeting with Ed Miliband, but said that he was neither influential nor important, and is just keeping the seat warm for when his brother comes back. Uh-huh. 2 points to Phil. Rebecca, who made a right royal mess of a sell-off?
Oh, I thought for a minute this was going to be the really big news story of the week, which is the one that's dominated all the newspapers today, which is that the Duchess of Cambridge's skirt blew up. I mean, it didn't literally blow up, because that obviously... that actually really would be a very big news story.
It was a controlled explosion.
It was a controlled explosion. But it did...
What had she been eating?
A gust of wind, external.
Yes.
Inflated her skirt.
How do you know that?
Because it was all over the newspaper.
No, but how do you know it was an external gust of wind? We don't know this for sure.
But I'm a trusting kind of a girl.
Right.
Anyway, it revealed a little bit of bestockinged knee.
No.
And it has made every newspaper imaginable. But anyway, I thought that was what it was going to be when you said royal, but it's not that. In fact, it's a different... flotation story entirely. It's about Royal
Mail. Does she have cellulite? I didn't see the pictures.
Of course she doesn't. No, because she's royal and they would have got rid of all that, weren't they, with some, you know, hydroxytetra thingy, you know, like the advertising.
It's not right. Normal person. I've got thighs like a navel orange. That's going to leave you all with that thought for a little while.
I'm trying to just sit here for a bit while everybody just ruminates on it. On your thighs.
Sorry.
Now, after the gig, me and Jeremy want to get a basket of various citrus fruits. It's more like a satsuma, really.
Anyway, yes, it's actually a story about Royal Mail, which was sold off. And the bankers who were charged with advising Vince Cable on the price of the shares and the value of the company... were brought before a business select committee this week because all did not go entirely as planned. I like to imagine that because this was a Royal Mail sell-off, that these bankers were all left queuing outside in the cold with a closed door in front of them. And then eventually somebody went, banker number one, please. Went in. That's how I hope it happened, anyway. And that they went in and found there was only one person on the select committee because all the others were doing paperwork, you know. Anyway, they had valued the company at $3.3 billion. Mm. And then it turned out it was actually worth $5.5 billion, which is a discrepancy.
Jeez.
I mean, I don't know much about numbers and sums, but that's a discrepancy. And when you've got people giving up their welfare benefits, that's quite an important discrepancy, I would say. So
Have they got Reverend Flowers to do the maths?
So they were hauled before this committee and they said that they'd done absolutely nothing wrong. And I, for one, when a senior banker says that they've done nothing wrong, am very much inclined to believe them.
Mm. Nobody thought that was right, though, selling off the Royal Mail. No one thought. I mean, even Conservatives thought it was wrong, mainly because it's got the word royal in it. I think if Labour in 1945 had called everything royal when they nationalised it, like Royal Rail and Royal Steel and Royal Gas, it would all still be in the public sector. Because Margaret Thatcher wouldn't do it. She wouldn't privatise it. She said, I will not privatise the Queen's head. I mean, once it's on a stick, I don't care who owns it. But I think there's a much, much more important point about ownership. And the thing is, if you've got a share in Royal Mail, you're all pleased with yourself. But before, you owned all of it. And now you only own a tiny, tiny little bit. So you're an idiot, I reckon.
Bankers who advised the government on the flotation of Royal Mail have been accused of drastically undervaluing it by the Business Select Committee. Shares in Royal Mail rose by 38% on the first day of trading and are currently around 65% higher than the opening price. In its defence, Goldman Sachs produced a note sent to the government that read, "We tried to warn you that we can't be trusted, but you were out." 2 points to Rebecca. Sam, have a listen to this. Oh, baby, hi. Sam, who thinks that mates' rates should be paid for by the taxpayer?
I think that this is the story about a new rule coming in that ministers are going to be allowed to bring in outsiders, and the anxiety is that this is going to cause ministers to give cronies money at the taxpayer's expense, because that hasn't been a problem before. I mean, as it happens, actually, they're already allowed to do that. There are these people called SPADs, who are special advisors, who come in. But the difference is SPADs aren't allowed to boss other civil servants about. What exactly they are for is not completely clear. But now they've sort of moved this so that the sort of super SPADs, or whatever they're going to be called, are going to come in and they'll be allowed to boss other civil servants about. But there are Chinese walls, and these Chinese walls prevent you from hiring super SPADs. And these Chinese walls obviously have to be smashed to smithereens, because at the moment there's a very, very real danger, as politicians say, that people who've worked in a department for a long time and know exactly what they're talking about could get involved in the decision-making process. And so that needs stopped, and that's why this new thing is being
it's
rolled
out. It's getting confusing, though, with all the different... You just want the politicians to call a spad, don't you? You just want them to be...
But a spad in the railways is a signal past at danger, isn't it? You can't have somebody else's... It's like General Sir Michael Jackson. You think, no, you can't be called... he's a Motown legend. It's like being called Brigadier Sir Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. You can't... And I don't think you're allowed to be called a spad.
So one of the people complaining about flowers this week was called Glenn Miller, and I thought, that's where he's been.
Can I just say, on the name thing, the head of the FDA Civil Servants Union is called David Penman, which I like very much. He just has to have other colleagues, isn't he? I've got Jonathan Shufflepaper and Joanna Tickbox. Coalition plans to employ dozens of politically appointed civil servants have been criticised for potentially breeding a culture of cronyism. The government says that ministers appointing their own advisers will help things move more quickly. Yes, and so will cutting the brakes on a bus, but it's still not a good idea. 2 points to Sam. Jeremy, who thinks massaging the figures isn't a crime?
I was quite baffled by this. It said in the paper that the police had been massaging crime figures, and I had visions of gang bosses getting shiatsu off the police in return for information. Because the police are good at that sort of thing. They've learned, you know, they do that pressure point thing on non-violent demonstrators on the back of the neck. It's this little pressure point thing they learnt from some struck-off Vulcan acupuncturist. No, but basically, because they want to be seen to be solving more crimes than there are, they want us to not think crime is such a problem that it is, they've been fiddling with the figures. What they do is they downgrade things so that burglary is put down as ramblers foraging while exercising their right to way. or GBH is sort of overzealous tickling. if they say, what exactly happened? And you say, well, the man put the shotgun over the counter and demanded that I empty the safe. And they say, so in a way, you lost everything. Well, yes, we did. So in a way, you kind of lost the money. We could put that down as kind of absent-mindedness on your part. We'll just put that down as... And in their defence, they said that they're under pressure to hit targets. Now, most of us would wish that they didn't shoot anybody at all, but if they are going to... That they would try and shoot the right ones.
It's not good, though, is it? First Plebgate and now this. You're starting to think the police might be, I don't know, hanging around with the wrong sort of people. A bit untrustworthy. I have to say the best crime fighters have always manipulated the truth. Batman wasn't a real bat. I don't know if you know that. Is anybody surprised by this?
Well, no, you just mentioned Penman.
Yeah.
He's mightier than Swordman.
Evidence given to MPs from serving and retired officers suggests that the police routinely massage crime figures in order to make their performance appear better. All sorts of crimes were downgraded, thefts were recorded as lost property, attempted burglary as criminal damage, and fashion crimes were recategorised as brave choices. Policing Minister Damien Green said a robust inquiry into recording practices would report next autumn, although the police are expected to reclassify that as a quick chat sometime in 2020. At 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Phil and Rebecca have got 4 points, but Sam and Jeremy are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a cutting from the Evening Standard's television listings.
BBC Three, 7:40 p.m. film, Armageddon. NASA spot a large asteroid on a collision course with Earth. 10 p.m, Boom Town.
And our thanks to David Bates for sending us that. Phil, listen to this. What a ghastly noise. Phil, who needs a rebrand to ensure election riches?
There is a Tory discussion group, apparently, at Westminster, called Bright Blue, is it?
Yeah.
Which is just delightful, because they're only half of that. and a man called, Nick Boll?
Nick Boll
made a speech this week to the Bright Blue people.
Sounds like he's addressing Smurfs.
Yeah. And he basically said that there's a danger that the Conservative Party can now be seen by the electorate as just completely and utterly pandering to the needs of basically looking after their mates that are bankers and captains of industry and everything, and just ensuring that they get a smooth ride to do whatever they want. And they're just going to be seen as this party of the rich. And I'm like, yeah, as it ever was. So, but he thinks that they need to rebrand. They can be seen as aliens, I think was the expression that he used. The problem with MI have is I'm fairly sure, because I don't watch the party conferences an awful lot. I always use like Labour because they finish with a song, albeit a very dreary song, that they sang with no enthusiasm whatsoever. The Conservatives finish with a song, do they?
No.
Because I think it'd be nice if William Hague stood up and just started it off on his own. You know, oh, fatherland, fatherland. And then they all joined in. And at the end, they got the beer steins and they're doing the whole bit. Because that's very rousing, that song. I've seen that loads. And that'd be a new image for them.
That would be good.
But basically, apparently, they're in need of some sort of upgrade, the Conservatives, according to Mr. Bold. He also thinks that the right kind of leader for them is Boris, who portrays millionaires as being like the homeless. That's how oppressed they are. This is what he said in a speech this week, that the super rich are as demonised as the homeless. And is there as ever proof that finally the Conservative library cuts are really kicking in now? It's because this boy is obviously not reading his speeches before he makes them.
Can you imagine more Tory MPs like Boris, more Tory MPs on bicycles insulting Scousers and forgetting where they've left their mistress? I mean, it would just... Is that the way forward? The future's bright, the future's Boris. I just think it would just...
I suppose being homeless in a way is like being super rich, because the super rich have got lots of homes and they probably don't know from one night to the next where they're going to be staying, do they? You know, I mean... Shall I go to the estate? Shall I stay in the flat in town? Shall I go to my mistress's place? What about my island? You know.
In an unauthorised speech to a Tory think tank, the Conservative MP Nick Bowles said that many young people would never vote for them because they still see the Conservatives as a party for rich people. More needs to be done to address the Conservatives' image as the party of the rich, said Bowles, the public school-educated alumnus of Oxford and Harvard and son of Sir Jack Bowles, the former Director General of the National Trust. Bowles said many Tories were desperate for an answer to the question of how to make their grandchildren vote Conservative. It's really easy. No vote, no inheritance. That's it. Rebecca, why can we look forward to seeing a bishop in a tutu?
Oh, yes, women bishops. Yes, the headline for this story was Women Bishops a Step Closer, which made it sound like this is what they do at Synod. They just play a sort of giant ecclesiastical game of grandma's footsteps. So there was General Synod took place, and they voted overwhelmingly in favour, not of actually ordaining women bishops yet, but of keeping the conversation open and making that more of a possibility. I wasn't actually invited to Synod. This may surprise you. all those bishops, not a single actress. I mean, there's a comedy opportunity. But anyway, I wasn't there. But had I been there, I would have been able to voice my opinion, which is this. I disapprove.
Oh.
I disapprove, and I'll tell you why. I'm all in favour of women's lib. I'm sure you know this about me. I think it's marvellous what you feminists are doing. I think it's a shame... No, I think it's a shame when some of them let themselves go, obviously, because a bit of mascara wouldn't go amiss. But other than that... I think it's a jolly fine thing that women, you know, or ladies, as I like to call them, have their free reign and get to sort of, you know, play at doing all sorts of jobs. I think that's marvellous. But bishops, I don't know. You know, I know the dresses are lovely. Mm. And those rings, frankly, are to die for. But I
and
just...
be resurrected for.
But I just think, you know, we've got other things to worry our pretty little heads about. Somebody's hissing as if I'm serious.
Do you know, I've completely changed my position on this thing now. You've totally persuaded me.
Talked you round.
It's fantastic.
I just think, you know, if women really were adept at dealing with these difficult issues, then there would be more women in cabinet.
That's so true.
I rest my case.
Do you know, years ago I was in Israel by myself, travelling by myself across Israel, and I joined something called the Hallelujah Tours, and I probably should have paid more attention that probably wasn't going to be the trip. The trip for me, I was 23 years old, and I got on the bus. It was me and 49 Mennonites from the United States, which is a rather serious church. They don't believe in anything, really, or God, obviously, but... because you couldn't take photographs and you couldn't drink or anything. And I did, honestly, genuinely sit down next to a man, and I was working at the time in repertory theatre, and he was a bishop, and I said, oh, that's a bit of interesting thing, I'm an actress. And so I spent 10 very long days in the wilderness with these people. We went out into the Sinai Desert, and when I got back, I was dying for a drink. And I went to the King David Hotel in Jerusalem and ordered a vodka martini, and I looked down the end of the bar, and there was the bishop. We got so drunk.
Is that initial image of you walking across Israel on your own? Mm. I can't imagine you without Samwise Gamgee. Come on, Mr. Toxvig.
I thought it was the laity of the problem. The bishops and the clergy are all on side with it. It's the laity. It's the ones who believe in God are causing all the problems.
I wonder what the Methodists had to say. Yeah, we got stuff going on at the minute. What do you want? What, women? Yeah. Why not? Yeah, yeah. Dressed as a donkey, full of heroin. Yeah. Yeah.
The former Archbishop of Canterbury, George Carey, warned this week that Christianity was a generation from extinction. I just thought they probably only hired women so they can clean up at the end. I just... Does it interest you, Sam? Are you of religious persuasion?
I'm not of religious persuasion, but I'm sort of slightly terrified by the idea of women bishops.
Why? What have you done?
Exactly. There's twice as many people to judge me.
Oh, yes, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yes, no, I'd rather they just stayed over there, doing their bishopy things in their bishopy robes.
Right,
left
you
me
think
alone.
Women bishops are more likely to mingle?
Yes, they might do. They're more sociable.
Miles more sociable.
It would make those terrible kind of sitting room drama moments much more interesting. Darling, I have been shagging the bishop.
You could have a sitcom, couldn't you? A male bishop is married to a female bishop.
Oh,
or something.
Yes.
Yes.
Get in.
Yes.
That's very good.
Actually, just don't put that in the program because I'm going to pitch that tomorrow.
I want to come and help you pitch this sitcom because it's like, he put the men in ecumenical. She put the shop in bishop. Together.
It won't be called a bishopric anymore, will it?
No.
They're called a bishop twinkle.
Bishop what?
Twinkle.
I'm not sure you've entirely understood the original word, Tommy. I'm just saying.
I'm loving this insight into your home life, gentlemen.
The Church of England's General Synod has voted overwhelmingly in favour of proposals to allow female bishops. It's thought the move will be fully approved next July, unless, in the meantime, God puts her foot down. The Bishop of Rochester, James Longstaff, said, "The train is on the tracks, the train is moving forwards, and we now have some stations to pass along the way." Which is, of course, a quote from the good book Reverend Audrey's Thomas the Tank Engine. 2 points to Rebecca. Jeremy, who can't graduate to a job with a degree of skill?
Everybody in work is overqualified, apparently. And one of the things keeping the lesser skilled people out of work is the fact that people with degrees are doing jobs way below what they could be doing. But then I suppose, in a way, that's looking at qualifications purely as a means of entry into the job market. I mean, I've got a degree in history and politics, which is of absolutely no use whatsoever. And I suppose I do a job that's absolutely of no use whatsoever. So that fits. But, you know, why shouldn't a bricklayer have a degree in classics, for example? Mm. But medicine, you do well with a medicine degree. Arts, pretty useless.
The medical graduates have the highest rates of employment and the highest average earnings, but they do have to look up people's bottoms. So I think it sort of swings and roundabouts.
You don't have to look up people's bottoms.
You do if they've got a bottom problem.
You can just stick your finger up.
I'd rather look. And I never thought about having to make that choice.
As only goes to us, it's a bottom. That's why we're not bothered to you. It's a cave.
That's true.
Yeah. You go, hello, oh.
You sound like a troll.
But maybe even within medicine, everybody's overqualified. Maybe people who are qualified brain surgeons are just doing the finger up bottom stuff.
That's the long way to go, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you think about it, Philip, would you rather have someone drill a hole in your head or go the long way round?
I like the idea of shops employing graduates. I went to buy some shoes the other day, and the sales assistant also diagnosed me with mild arrhythmia and persistent rhinitis.
If you ever go anywhere in Cambridge, everybody is an undergraduate working through college. And so you go to buy a cup of coffee in Cambridge, it's like, oh, right, coffee, oh, wow, yeah, okay, no, I think I can do this. Right, okay,
You are so right. When I was at Cambridge, honestly, there were people who could split an atom and not wire a plug. I mean, it was just...
It's a very depressing spin to put on it, though, isn't it? Couldn't we put a more encouraging one by simply saying, rather than lots and lots of graduates have got low-status jobs, you say that all of these jobs are now university graduate jobs.
Ah, so everything
is. And that the person is drawing your name on the cup in Starbucks, you can say, can you do that in Aramaic for me, please? And they've got all these...
Do you
it's,
tell
it's
them
an opportunity,
when...
not a failure.
That's so sweet of you, Johnny. I sense you've not been out the house much. Out of interest, all of you, when the person in Starbucks says, what is your name, how many of you tell the real name? Because I always say something else. So what happens, I always say something, I say, you know, interesting, Florence Nightingale or something, I say something sort of amusing, and then the person goes, here you are, Sandy. And you just think, oh.
I had an embarrassing moment with, I was in Starbucks with my daughter. I was trying to be fun mum. And so we both agreed we were going to give false names, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. She went first, and she said Tallulah or something, you know, and they sort of write it down. She was kind of laughing, and they went, yeah, and you? And I went, Rebecca. I'm just such a failure.
Surely as an actress, you should have gone, line. Tallulah as well, please.
Yeah. I'll have what she's having.
But that's your whole life, being somebody else. You simply couldn't... Why, you just couldn't lie?
Because nobody had written it down for me. I'd have to have a script.
I love the idea of having to go to Starbucks, somebody behind you with a typewriter. The Office for National Statistics has found that nearly half of those who graduated within the past 5 years are in jobs that do not require a degree. In total, 47% of recent graduates have been forced to accept low-skilled jobs such as waitress, sales assistant or chairman of the Co-op Bank. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round two, the scores are Phil and Rebecca have got 8 points, but Sam and Jeremy are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from a Warwickshire County Council news email.
If you want to find out more about Alcohol Awareness Week or the Drug and Alcohol Action Team, feel free to pop by my desk. Kind regards, Chloe Drinkwater.
And our thanks to Roger Harding for sending us that. Phil, why should fitness freaks exercise more caution?
As you might imagine, Sandy, this is a story that very much captured my imagination. In that it kind of backed up something that I've felt in my heart of hearts for many years, which is that exercise can be bad for you. Mm. Get in! Some Swiss people have been measuring people because presumably they now know why there's holes in the cheese, so they've got time to discover other things. So apparently, if you exercise more than 14 hours a week, it can wear away important bits, can damage stuff. Look, it's a fitness story. What do you want from me?
Did you do sports in school?
Rugby, because rugby is not about physical ability, it's about mass. Hmm. So, you know, if you're a big dumpy kid, rugby comes on, it's great, because they just basically use you as ballast.
I was good at hurdles.
Did you go underneath them?
Straight underneath, every single one.
I was very touched by the thing in this that it says that actually... It's not just that it can damage you, but doing too much exercise can lead to unhappiness.
Perfect.
And that was my experience. I just remember a lot of mud and a lot of drowning in mud with people like Phil sitting on top of me. So I don't have a completely positive attitude towards sport, but I quite like making daisy chains. Have you got... If you're playing cricket, right, you could always ask to say, oh, I need to do deep field, which is the bit, you know, where the trees are. And you can just sit there like Ferdinand the Bull, knitting daisy chains, and one time in 10 the ball will come in your general direction, and that's normally a disaster. But otherwise, great.
Can I just say, you could have any woman in this room.
Yeah, like that. Okay, just going to say, not quite any woman. Just say.
That's because your daisy chains are made with real chains.
Yes. I like this reporter. I'm always careful not to overdo exercise. If I use a running machine, I only do widths. This story, though, that exercise is bad for you. Right, I know loads of lazy people, okay? Genuinely, I've never met anybody who's run a marathon, and that's because they're all dead.
What about poor old Eddie Izzard, who did... how many did he do? Did he do, like, some, like, 36 marathon? He did a marathon a day for a month.
Why?
So that's why. And but presumably, when he eventually does run for Mayor of London, Boris is going to go, "Well, you can't vote for him, he has no cartilage."
According to researchers in Switzerland, getting too much exercise could be as bad as getting none at all, with over-exercisers developing low self-esteem and anxiety. The results were published in the Archive of Childhood Diseases Journal. Damn, just as my subscription ran out. Teenagers who exercise too much are more likely to have low self-esteem, research has revealed, as are teenagers who exercise too little, as well as teenagers just in general, really. Excessive exercise doesn't improve brain power in the way that moderate exercise does. Another piece of the Wayne Rooney jigsaw falls into place. Two points to Phil. Rebecca, who has a wizard suggestion for protecting one's privacy?
Oh, Daniel Radcliffe.
He does. He's sweet.
Little Harry Potter. Daniel Radcliffe has said that he's not on Twitter or Facebook or doesn't do social media stuff because he can't understand at all why well-known people use social media. And he says if you use Twitter, then you only have yourself to blame if your privacy is invaded because you've invaded it yourself. And he's got a point. I mean, as somebody who is on Twitter, he has got a point. You are sort of giving away lots. I'm incredibly cautious on Twitter. I give away very little about myself. I know one or two people who are actually quite well known who do extraordinary things where they say things like, well, the tax is at the door, and then the next tweet will say, I'm off on holiday for 3 weeks. You think? And you've just told all the burglars in your area that your place is unattended. I found that extraordinary, but I am very slightly pathologically cautious about what I put out there. And anyway, as my kids keep reminding me, really nobody is interested. Anyway, I think there are benefits to being on Twitter, and I think to counter his argument, if you're not on Twitter, then you've only got yourself to blame if you're not up to date with the latest funny cat videos.
Jeremy, you tweet?
I shamelessly plug things that need to be plugged. Yeah. Like gigs that I'm doing. And then I put the sold-out ones on there as well, because otherwise it would give the game away. But I'm only putting the ones on where I still need to shift tickets. And occasionally I'll put a humorous remark on, and then I'll think, bugger, I could have used that on the news quiz.
What about you, Sam? Is it something you have to do for work?
Not really. It takes the middleman out a bit, because normally back in the day, you used to write something in the newspaper, and you'd get a letter in the post a few days later to the newspaper saying that the reader thought you were an idiot. But now they can do it instantaneously, so it's just a way of exposing yourself to people looking you up and telling you you're an idiot and that they hate you. And I find that's quite nice, because sometimes they used to do it in person and now they don't. So it's encouraging from that point of view. One thing Twitter is very good for, actually, is watching telly. Those big shows, you know, the event shows that happen at such and such time, at like the X Factor or the, you know, whatever it is. And you get lots and lots of people watching it on Twitter and doing a hashtag. So you're reading the tweets, but then the show's on, and you have to pause it to read the tweets. And then they start, after about half an hour, you're a minute or two behind. And so you start to get spoilers. You're like, he's dead? And so you're fast-forwarding. And it's like going up an escalator, you know, when the handrail's moving very slightly fast.
I would have thought if you don't want to be recognised, you want to break from being famous, then just win X Factor. That would be... This is the shocking news that an actor has said something eminently sensible. Daniel Radcliffe has said he avoids social media because celebrities who tweet have no right to demand their privacy. Radcliffe became world famous for playing the boy wizard Harry Potter before becoming equally famous for being the bloke who used to play the boy wizard Harry Potter. Most recently, Radcliffe has been promoting the second series of A Young Doctor's Notebook, which is about a turn-of-the-century Russian medic who becomes secretly addicted to opium. Very popular in Toronto. And at the co-op. 2 points to Rebecca. Sam, which city has been renamed the Kingston of Culture?
The Kingston of Culture. That would be Hull, which is now the City of Culture 2017, having beaten off very strong competition from, I think, Dundee Leicester and Swansea Bay.
Don't laugh.
What's wrong with you people?
Doesn't speak very well of Radio 5 Swansea Bay. What a preposterous notion. The idea of the Welsh would have anything as grand as a bay.
And, I mean, the peculiar thing about the City of Culture thing is it's not quite clear how it's chosen, is whether the idea is it's the town that's got the most culture or the town that's most in need of some.
But the selection committee was chaired by Phil Redmond, who gave us Hollyoaks. So I think no matter what you think of his decisions, it's only the second worst thing he's ever done.
It's a big town for poets.
It's a very big town for poets. Philip Larkin.
Stevie Smith was born there. Yeah, John
Andrew
Prescott.
Marvell. Mm?
Andrew Marvell.
Did you know Andrew Marvell? I knew he worked in government as well as being a poet. Did you know he was secretary for Latin?
Was he?
Why do we not bring that back? I mean, they could give Gove that job.
Yes.
Keep him away from education.
No, but he'd be good at it. There's a man who's good at declining. There's a bridge to nowhere in Hull, which I like very much. It's called the Scale Lane Bridge. And the idea was they were going to do massive redevelopment on the other side of the bridge, but they haven't done the redevelopment. There's just the bridge. And there's a wonderful quote from a local councillor who said, "The positive thing is that in infrastructure terms, it's there now, and we'll not need to build another one." Kingston-upon-Hull has been named the UK City of Culture for 2017, beating off competition from Dundee, Leicester and Swansea Bay. The former MP for Hull East, John Prescott, tweeted, "It's happy hour again." And whilst he was at the pub, someone also told him Hull was the new City of Culture. 2 points to Sam. Jeremy, listen to this. You're so vain. You probably think this song is about. Jeremy, which award-winning word is enormously self-regarding?
Selfie. Has it made it into the Oxford English Dictionary or something?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the new word, selfie. And all it is a self-portrait. Van Gogh did loads of them. Mainly because he was so impressed with his new ear bandage. a selfie where you take it on your iPhone, a picture of your own face. I usually just take pictures of my genitals by accident because... Because my phone's in my pocket and I don't lock it properly.
And you don't wear pants?
I've got holes in my pocket. Very
felt we
powerful
needed to get
camera.
Yeah. The full picture.
But being a bit literal there.
Lots of words that I hadn't come across. Do you know about twerk?
I know everything there is to know about twerking.
Do you?
Let's play a little round of Call My Bluff. The four of us will give Sandy a definition of twerking. Okay, so yeah. Sandy.
So the word
twerking.
Is twerking, yes.
It's what Yorkshire people do Monday to Friday.
Rebecca, do you know what it is?
Twerking is a form of booty-shaking dance, as demonstrated right now by Jeremy.
The listeners will just have to use their imagination.
I'm overexcited by Jeremy's dancing. It was like Miley Cyrus was in the room. No, I know about twerk. A twerk is to dance in a sexually provocative manner, and it's very onomatopoeic because that is the same noise my hamstring made when it snapped when I tried it. Okay, try these. I'll do some healthy. Do you know what a healthy is? These are other spin-offs from selfie.
That's when you take a picture of yourself when you're very well.
No.
No, it's a shot of your hair.
A belfie. Really work,
a belfie.
That's a picture taken in your pocket.
That's. That's where the bats are in a church.
Yeah, it's a shot of your behind. Schmeet.
What?
Schmeet. It's synthetic form of meat. Yeah, and schmeeting. I don't know what that is.
I'm pretty sure that Flowers knows what schmeeting is.
Schmeeting. Think of schmeeting.
It's where two strange kinds of meat come together.
Selfie, the term used to describe a self-portrait captured by camera phone, has been named as Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year. Selfie wasn't originally considered for the award, but is so vain it nominated itself. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Jupiter.
Sandra, I am indebted to Keith Booth of Sutton in Surrey for sending in this from the Sutton Guardian. From the letters page. I would like to ask the person who walks a dog in Carl Shalton Park and surrounding streets who clears up after their dog and then just leaves the poo-filled bag on the grass/pavement. Well done. You've very nearly completed the task. Either bin it or take it home, please. Glad that is off my chest.
Ms. Front.
Yes, this was sent in by Janice Thomas, and it's a classified ad. Double bed, comfortable, orthopaedic support, 2 years old, some soiling, so requires mattress cover, bargain at £40.
Oh. Mr. Leith.
This one's from Christopher Hill, and it's a cutting from the Wiltshire Gazette and Herald. School bosses have spoken of their horror and surprise after discovering a sex toy being advertised on a fundraising website. A former Abbeyfield pupil contacted the Gazette. I was disgusted that it had Abbeyfield at the top of the page. When I went to the school, we were blocked from accessing pornography sites or anything like that. It's a good price, though, only £21.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Catherine Alexander, and it's from the Whitby Gazette. Pop star Alistair Griffin won Best in Show at Danby for his lemon curd after 12 years of trying. He said, it was a massive day in my life. Just before I found out about the curd, I found out my new single, The One, had made the Radio 2 playlist. Alistair, who is currently on tour, puts his success down to an anonymous third party in the curd world. He said, it's all about the winning. I've been trying since I got third place 12 years ago. Alistair admitted he doesn't enter any other categories as it would be a distraction.
Well, I think that brings us up to date on lemon curd news. Let's take a look at the final score. Phil and Rebecca have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Sam and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting about the Monty Python reunion from the Rolling Stone website, spotted by Andrew Carrington.
Rising to success in the late 60s, the comedy troupe achieved comedy stardom in the 70s. But following the death of Graham Chapman in 1989, a full-on reunion became less likely.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Phil Jupiter's Rebecca Brandt, Sam Leith and Jeremy Hardy. And the chair was Sandy Toxwick, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Roger Crooks, Lucy Clark and Andy Walton, with additional material by Mark Smith and Gronya McGuire. The producer was Sam Michelle.